Hello, everyone, and welcome to the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Showgram Extravaganza, August 19th. Can you believe it? A little housekeeping before we get to the good stuff. Fantasy411.mlblogs.com, where the goose lives and thrives and breathes and delivers your two-start pitchers, your pitcher ditch, and answers your questions, so don't forget that. On the Twitter machine, you can follow the general account, at Fantasy411.
You stop also, doing that. No one can see.
I salute every time I say it, by the way. you can follow Schwartstops, or you can follow Corey at Schwartstops, at TheCapped23, and then the Goose at ZachMLB. But we highly recommend for you fantasy information needies, to do the at Fantasy411, which, by the way, is the general.
You can't stop yourself.
The RonChandler.com stuff is coming back for September. So he did July, took off August to retool. And Ron got a lot of feedback and has been very interactive with those who took part. So please check out our good friend Ron Chandler at RonChandler.com.
And a small add to that, Ron is looking to hire writers.
I know.
So if you are an aspiring fantasy writer and you're within range of my voice right now, go to RonChandler.com if you want to write.
Hey, you never know. You look at Jason Collette, Paul Spora, it goes on and on and on. Guys that really just worked their tails off and got themselves a Derek Hardy, got themselves that writing gig, and now, you know, in many ways are household names.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. A lot of the Friday podcasts we've been doing with the guests, I'm asking all of them, if you weren't doing this, what would you be doing? And a lot of them really had other careers going on and sort of fell into the
some
fantasy
still do.
Thing.
Some
yeah,
still do.
Absolutely. But, you know, Emac and, you know, I guess Derek Van Riper are probably the only two that were really on a path designed to lead them here. Most of the other guys, they just sort of fell into it. You know, even Matthew Berry was a TV screenwriter.
Sure.
And, you know, Steve Gardner from USA Today, who was our last guest the Friday before last, he was a radio guy. You know, he was a radio play-by-play guy. That was an awesome interview with him. So
I love Steve. One of my favorite people in all the world. I mean,
just a nice guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just interesting that, you know, everybody's got other things going on, but if you want to write, you got to just start writing, and maybe who knows.
Yeah, you know, now I'm a little bummed that I wasn't able to do that one on Friday because I go way back with the it's funny.
You're a radio guy too. And Steve are like kindred spirits.
There you go. But that's not even where I'm going.
You could have been the producer for Steve.
There you go. What I was going to talk about was I was a Baseball Weekly junkie.
Yeah.
It was the greatest thing in the world. I couldn't wait for it to come out every Monday. I would read every single word, and, you know, you had the team notes, so you always, you know, it was always, that's where you got the info, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was a junkie for it before I even played fantasy, before I even knew what fantasy was. But at the same time, since I read every page, I also read John Hunt. And, you know, John Hunt with the creation of labor and all that stuff, and that's what really got everything going as far as, you know, a league went, where you started having expert leagues, right? Labor, I guess, was the official, first one.
I believe labor was first.
Yep. Well, labor was definitely before tout. I don't think there was anything else around. So, you know, and then obviously reading Steve. And I've talked to Steve about this over cold ones, about John Hunt and about labor and about this and about that. And I thought it would have been fun to go back into that for maybe I would have asked different questions, but or you would have just wrote on a piece of paper, let the guests talk. You're talking too much like you did last time.
Well, it's funny, like, every now and then, like, when we go do stuff at FanFest or we do things that are, like, interactive Q&A with fans, there will be there will be one person who will get up there and start talking and go on and on and on, and eventually I'll sort of raise my hand to interrupt, and I'll be like, is there a question in here?
Oh, yeah.
And there's no question.
Well, the best is when you listen on radio, Francesa does this all the time, but other hosts do this when they get agitated, that a caller, a fan, whatever, keep doing that, just talking and talking and talking. Yet, that's what they were asked to do, was to come on and ask a question. Yeah, sometimes you go on tangents and diatribes and all that stuff. And then when the host starts yelling back, he goes, can I talk? It's my show, right? Can I talk? It's my show, right? That's basically what you were doing.
No, no, no.
This is the Corey Schwartz show. Can I talk on it? Is it all right if I talk on
it? It's not that I'm saying can I talk. It's if you want to ask a question, just let me know. If you just want to make a statement, I'll check my watch, I'll whatever. But, you know, it's fun. Anyway.
Anyway, I'll hang up and let you answer.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Great. I'm going to ask my question, then hang up, and I'll take the answer off the air. Oh, I know you're going to hang up because we're going to cut you off.
Boom. Oh, man. Good times. I used to screen calls when I worked at WFAN, and my God.
Did you ever get a Baba Booey like somebody snuck through?
Oh, all the time. All the time. We used to get Baba Booey, and we used to get Go Pat Go for Pat Buchanan. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I used to, you know, when I started out, after my internship, my first gig was overnight producer. Weekends. So 3:30 in the morning on Saturday night. Think about it.
That's the knucklehead
show. Only the best.
That's like
the cream of the crop.
That's like 4 in the morning on a Sunday at the Hotel Penn across from Penn Station. That's just life's rich pageant.
And when nobody would call, like there'd be no callers, the host would just be like, Pete Rose, what about him? And also, boom. Anyway, we digress dramatically.
All right.
So, yeah, I did all the housekeeping. and no, it's great. I got to go back and listen to the Steve Gardner from Friday. And, you know, I know we may not do shows the rest of the week. I mean, every week, I should say, rest of the way, because, you know, September gets kind of quiet. But we will say this. We are going to have at least one more show with Corey and I where we do our all surprise, all disappointment, all fantasy, MVP, Cy Young, all that fun stuff. And then we'll do a show dedicated just to fan questions.
Yeah, so focus on your keeper questions.
Right, exactly.
Stuff like that. And we'll definitely have at least one more guest. I'd like to get two.
Okay.
We'll have to check JB's availability as well. But we've had an awesome lineup of guests this year.
Great.
It's been really a lot of fun. And for those who are listening now, I really appreciate everybody coming on. And we're going to see if we can finish with two high notes.
Ooh. Yeah, because what are you saying? Everybody else was a low note?
No. I mean, they were all. I mean, that's the
thing. That's like when somebody says, you know, you look good today. What? I didn't look good any other day?
And we
look good today?
Well, that's what I always used to do.
And I like that shirt, by the way.
Thank you. That's what I always used to do to Pat DePiro, who was always, like, you know, exercising and weight conscious and worrying about his carbs. He'd come in and I'd say, Pat, did you lose weight? You've lost a lot of weight. You really look like you've lost a lot of weight. And he would get so mad about it. I'm like, well, what do you want me to say? Have you lost 6 ounces, Pat? I can see. So there's a shout out to our old buddy, Pat DePiro.
There you go. All right. So just, you know, so figure at least a handful more podcasts total the rest of the way for this regular season 2013. And with that said, let's get to some news and notes since Friday. A couple of debuts to discuss. We'll start with one that happened, the transaction officially happened, and we'll talk about one that is rumored to be happening in May by the time you hear this podcast. But first, we start with Colton Wong, the second baseman for the Cardinals, but he is going to platoon with David Freese.
Yeah, kind of, sort of platoon. Wong gets called up. He was hitting .303 with 10 homers and 20 steals. He's a left-handed hitter who doesn't really hit left-handed pitching. Like most young left-handed hitters, he struggles with that. OPS in AAA, about 180 points lower against lefties. David Freese bats right. So what you'll see is Wong and Freese will effectively platoon with Matt Carpenter flip-flopping between second and third.
Right.
So this adds
very
some offensive depth. Yeah. What's interesting, though, is that, you know, Freese is not having a great year, OPS around 760, but he doesn't really have any platoon splits. So it's not like you have to say you've got to bench this guy against righties. Throughout his career, he hits righties and lefties equally well. He's just not hitting this year up to his usual standards. And also, they've been very disappointed with his defense, which I think has been the bigger issue. So Wong comes up in deeper leagues. I think he's worth a definite call-up, certainly in keeper leagues. But in a 12-team mixed league, like the 4-1 listener league, I don't know if you really jump out and grab this guy right away. You know, he's not a fast guy. He's one of those guys who steals on opportunity, so we'll have to see if that translates. He's 5'9", 5'10". He's not a huge power hitter. You know, I view his upside as being something similar to maybe a Matt Carpenter, maybe with a little bit more speed, a little bit less power. So 15-team leagues, non-mixed keeper leagues, you're definitely going to want to grab him, but he's not going to play every day, and he looks like a good but not great offensive player. So keep that in mind. But definitely it's a huge hit on Freeze's value. I think that's the biggest takeaway here.
Okay, and then Travis d'Arnaud also, by the way, for the D in his name, they had to use an upside-down P. I don't know if you caught that news story.
Really?
Big news out of San Diego.
On the uniform?
On the uniform.
No kidding.
It's an upside-down P.
Wow.
If you look closely. So kind of a little nugget, because he didn't get a hit this weekend, but he did draw some walks. And reports so far were pretty positive as far as discipline, plate discipline, even though he wasn't able to get on base via a hit. But still, hey, walk counts. Yeah. And it sounds like maybe when John Buck comes back, Darno doesn't get the glory of going back to Vegas after all. It's a possibility.
Yeah, this is amazing that, you know, John Buck, I mean, talk about bittersweet. He's away from the team on paternity leave. His wife is giving birth to a child, and he's going to lose his job. Because when he comes back, the word on the street right now is that Darno is going to keep the everyday job, and Buck will slide into that sort of veteran mentor backup role. So, I mean, from a baseball sense, it makes sense. A baseball standpoint, right. Buck, 9 homers in 25 in April, only 6-35 since then. Not a guy who's going to be a long-term asset. Darno wasn't really hitting that well in the minors, 286 with 3 homers in 32 games. But last year, 333 with 16 homers in 67 games. Now, that was at Vegas, and it's only 67 games. You take it with a grain of salt. But clearly, this guy is their future at catcher. He was mm-hmm. the centerpiece of the R.A. Dickey trade. The injuries have limited him, so you got to be concerned about that. And maybe Buck will play more than your usual backup. But now that Darno is up, they figure, hey, look, might as well get a look at him right now. So if you're carrying around Anthony Recker in your NL East only keeper league, dynasty league, you just took a big hit there. But it's a tough break. I mean, you know, Buck hadn't been hugely productive, but finding a catcher who plays every day and gives you a little bit of pop and can drive in some runs is not the easiest thing in the world. It's a thin position. So, you know, zero-sum game.
Can we call it your New Jersey Turnpike only league?
Wow. Like, oh, yeah. Wow, that was a good one. Garden State Parkway League?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, Darno, it's funny because you see what Wheeler has done since he's been called up, and stuff just looks great some nights. He had that big, big game against
the Padres. 12-strikeout game against the Padres.
12 strikeouts. And you forget that he isn't, or wasn't, the center, quote-unquote, centerpiece of the deal. But, I mean, you look at Wheeler Darno, I mean, that could be just an amazing score.
Well, Wheeler was the centerpiece of the Carlos Beltran deal.
Oh, that's one of my...
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, oh my God, that's why.
You're thinking of, who's it, Noah Syndergaard?
That's what I did. I confused him with Syndergaard. And you know why I did that? Because of my NL only league, I have Syndergaard and Wheeler.
There you go.
And that's exactly why I did it. So
all right.
Fantasy screwed me on this segment.
So now let's rank them. You know, Wong.
Thank you for doing.
You're going to be picking up only in, you know, 15 teams, unmixed keepers. Darno, I think, is a pickup in every league. They use an across the board pickup, a catcher who can hit and is going to play.
Sure.
100% pickup.
Sure.
All right. Now,
Xander Bogaerts.
This is the one that, as we're taping this, is not official yet.
Right.
So if you're hearing it and it's official, it's not like we didn't know. This hasn't happened yet. Word is he will be called up today, Monday, August 19th. And this has been anticipated for a while. You know, before the Iglesias trade, what are the Red Sox going to do at shortstop? You know, Stephen Drew's hit and miss. What are they going to do about their hole at third base? So they bring up Will Middlebrooks back from AAA. He starts hitting again, doubling a homer on Sunday night, swinging a good bat.
A nice homer on Sunday.
But Bogaerts apparently will get called up. So it's kind of it's not surprising he's getting called up. It's a little bit unusual timing, though, because Stephen Drew has been okay at shortstop, probably needs to be platooned. Middlebrooks has been getting the job done at third base. So it's almost setting up a three-man rotation here for two spots. Bogaerts, you know, you look at his overall stats, 822 OPS at AAA, 865 overall in the minors this year, 15 homers and 444 at-bats. Doesn't jump out at you, right? Doesn't scream superstar.
Right.
He's 20 years old.
Yeah.
Here's the rule of thumb, and we've stated this many times, but we like to do this for the newcomers. If you make it to the major leagues at the age of 20, odds are you're going to become a superstar. Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but the sooner and the younger you get to the majors, after holding your own in the minors, you're going to become a star. And that's why I really like Manny Machado this year. You know, his overall numbers weren't great, but he made the jump from AA to the majors in a pennant race to a brand new position at the age of 19 years old and wasn't great, but was certainly good, was certainly at least average.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hallmark of a superstar, that he wasn't blown away by the competition. Bogaerts will have to see how much he plays, but for him to be making this jump at the age of 20, again, somewhere between Wong and Darno. I don't think he's going to be play enough to be an immediate pickup in, let's say, 12-team mixed leagues. But 15 teams, unmixed leagues, keeper leagues, dynasty leagues, anywhere else, he's an immediate grab. And if he works his way into an everyday role, then you're going to want to pick him up anywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if he's hitting enough to play every day, he's got to be good enough to be on your team.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I mean, after all that happened last night, to then see this kind of call-up, it was a little... you know, it catches you off guard. And I don't know what it has to do with. We have to find out exactly, you know, get more information, I guess. But, you know, they have, you know, the Red Sox being they play this really, you know, they play the Sunday night game really late. Obviously, that game went on forever. And then they actually slept in their own bed Sunday night. Now they're waking up and flying to San Francisco.
Today? Yeah. To play tonight?
To play tonight.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. And those of you in weekly leagues, they are six games in NL Parks this week. Three in San Francisco, three at the Dodgers. So David Ortiz and or Mike Napoli, either they're going to have to share the playing time at first base or one of them is just going to be a glorified pinch hitter for the week. So weekly leaguers, if you've got another option, take a good long look at that situation.
Yeah, and this, I tweeted it out this morning, and by the time people hear this, it'll be too late. But I hope everybody got a chance to do their lineups because not only do you have a Monday day game because it's a makeup game with the Mets, yeah, but they're playing the Twins, so it impacts both leagues.
Right.
You know, so
everybody.
If you're in an NL or AL, and it impacts NL and AL only, whereas if it was Mets Padres, AL only players would
Didn't
still
get a
have
break.
Till 7 o'clock.
You got to make your decisions by 2 o'clock today. 2 o'clock,
yeah,
Eastern. And if you're hearing this after 2 o'clock, I hope you made the right decision.
Yeah, we have to wrap this up because I have to put my lineups in. I lost track of time.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Let's go back to where we were with the rest of the rundown from today. But that's good stuff to start out with: Bogarts, Darnold, and Wong. I mean, that's a pretty good start to the show right there.
Sure is.
But yes, but we have much, much more, including listener questions. Closer info out of Houston. Big news out of Houston. The Astros have confirmed that Josh Fields and Lowe will split the closer gig.
What's worse than the closer on the worst team in baseball?
Two of them.
Two guys splitting the gig. You know, we've seen both of them get some saves and some late inning opportunities. Fields, you know, the Rule 5 guy, 26 strikeouts in 25 innings, but 7 homers allowed. Lowe, 7 1/3 innings, but hasn't allowed any homers, but it's only 7 1/3 innings.
Right.
Fields wasn't that homer prone in the minors, one about every 18 innings. Lowe was even stingier, 128 minor league innings, only 6 homers. So I think this is basically a competition for the job. Whichever guy is more effective from now until the end of the year will probably get the gig. Unfortunately, in 12-team mixed leagues, you're probably only picking either of these guys if you're desperate, because again, you're looking at a half closer on the worst team in baseball by one loss record, no offense to Kevin Goldstein. So, you know, who wins the job? It really is going to come down to who can control the walks, who can control the homers. They've both got good fastball, good breaking ball, strikeout stuff. It's the walks and the homers that'll kill you. So I don't have a prediction on this. I don't have anything, any great insight. I didn't get KG to give me any hints before we came on the show. You know, deep leagues, I guess if you have to, but if you're in a 12-team mixed league and you're good for saves, you're just kind of chuckling at this one going, I'm glad I drafted, Aroldis Chapman and Greg Holland, right?
Yeah, there you go. I mean, right. But in this situation going in, I mean, you knew the Houston situation was going to be tough on draft day because there was no reason to believe Veras was going to last the year. Never mind as an Astro, but maybe not as a closer just based on performance. So you kind of had two things going against you if you were targeting him, and then once he was gone, what was going to happen? There was no, you know, David Robertson type guy just sitting there,
right,
you know, ready to take over and go.
Well, I drafted Veras in NFBC as my third closer.
Sure, and was the third closer.
I penciled in 20 saves, and I got 19. So
good job out of you.
You know,
if
they traded him 2 days later, I would have gotten full value.
Bingo.
There you go.
Yeah, you got pretty close to it, though.
I can't complain.
All right, Bartolo Colon, let's talk about some injury guys going onto the DL and coming off. Bunch of pitchers, as usual. But we'll start with Bartolo Colon heading to the 15-day DL, and then a little domino effect here with Brett Anderson involved.
Yes. So Tom Malone comes back, makes the start on Sunday for Colon. Brad Anderson was rehabbing. There was word that he would come back as a reliever. Now he may get a shot at the rotation. And meanwhile, this is kind of later in the rundown, but it makes sense here. Sonny Gray, the prospect, who got brought up to replace Malone, has been outstanding. 8 shutout innings against the Astros on Thursday, 20-5 strikeout to walk rate in his first 18 innings. So I think of all these guys, Gray is probably the one with the best shot of giving you a lot of fantasy value the rest of the way. You know, Malone, in my mind, a pure home away play. This season, his ERA on the road, 1.5 higher than at home. His next 2 starts in Baltimore, in Detroit. So you're not even bothering with him until they get onto that big 10-game homestand at the end of August and early September. Anderson will have to see. You know, everybody's going to value Anderson based on the 2.57 ERA from last year, but that was in 6 starts. 6, Mike.
Okay, 6.
This year he made 6 appearances, 5 starts, and had a 6.21 ERA before getting hurt. You don't know what you're going to get from him. Sonny Gray, you know, is he as good as he's been so far? Of course not, but Good strikeout numbers in the minors. Didn't hurt himself with the walk. Only allowed 13 homers in about 290 minor league innings. That's what you like to see. His next start is against Seattle. That's a must get. So any format, you want to try and grab him for that one. After that, he'll be in Baltimore. And then by then, might Brett Anderson be ready? Cologne should be back probably more than the 15 days, but definitely sometime in September. So their rotation's an interesting thing to watch. It's been an interesting point throughout the year. I remember early on in April and May, I have Jared Parker in a lot of leagues. And he was really one or two bad starts away from losing his rotation job based on his terrible start.
Absolutely.
And then that's when Brett Anderson got hurt. And then Parker turned his act around after the four-homer game in Cleveland. He's been lights out since then, other than one bad start. So, you know, this rotation has had a lot of valuable guys come and go. And now I think Gray is really the one to watch out of the bunch.
All right, Yovani Gallardo from with the Brewers, that weird hamstring injury he suffered a couple weeks ago trying to catch a pop-up. He's now back, and he comes back and does very well.
Yeah, kind of out of the blue because he's had a really disappointing year. 6 1/3 shutout innings against the Reds on Saturday. Yeah. He will get them again next time out, so we'll have to see how he does the next time. Then he's got Pittsburgh home and home after that. So if he handles the Reds, Pittsburgh home and home, two very favorable starts, then it gets tough. The Brewers, I don't know if you've looked, have a brutal September schedule. Mm-hmm. It's basically Cardinals-Reds, Reds-Cardinals, Cardinals-Reds, Reds-Cardinals. So, you know, Gallardo, maybe you put him in against the Reds this upcoming start. You like that home and home against Pittsburgh, but then you really, you go and pitch or ditch with the Brewers pitchers from here on out. Tyler Thornburg, who pitched very well, loses his rotation spot for Gallardo. If I have Gallardo in fantasy, I mean, if anybody still has him.
I know.
I don't know if you can even use him against the Reds. Even despite what he did on Saturday, his velocity has been down so much this year. I don't know if you can trust him against a good offense.
Okay. Some other Josh Johnson, some news out of Toronto with Josh Johnson. He is on the 15-day DL with the right forearm strain. Between Johnson and Morrow, not a good year for the top of that rotation as far as injury going health. I mean, Morrow ended up being an absolute disaster. Might as well throw in Colby Rasmus on the DL and stick with Toronto for a minute and talk about how Ghost got called up, the speedster.
All right, so as far as Johnson goes, the good news is no structural damage. Nothing torn, nothing strained, whatever, just a sore right forearm. But he's probably out for the year anyway. Really odd year with Johnson. The walk rate was up a little bit this year, but 9.2 strikeouts per nine. That's good stuff. His velocity looked good. His stuff was there. But brutal hit rate, brutal strand rate, and a home run to fly ball rate more than double his previous career worst. So was that a guy who was pitching hurt? Was that a guy who pitched in bad luck, having a hard time adjusting to the AL? I don't know. But he could make a nice little sneaky discount draft guy next year because of that 9.2 strikeouts per nine.
Yeah, that's true.
To replace him in the rotation, Todd Redman comes back. He faces the Red Sox and Rays, combines to allow only one run in 11 1/3 with nine strikeouts. He gets the Astros this week. You know, guy with good strikeout ability, 44 strikeouts and 43 1/3 innings overall. His big problem, the home runs. Seven home runs allowed in 43 1/3 innings. But pitch or ditch, grab him for that start against the Astros, I think, on Thursday or Friday.
Yeah.
But then he'd get the Yankees after that, and they're no pushover offense anymore. So that's the Blue Jays pitching side. On offense, Rasmus goes on the DL with the left oblique strain. Again, isn't it weird how these things work out? Strains at swinging, I think, on Saturday. Doesn't play Sunday, day to day. Doesn't play Monday, day to day. Oh, we think he'll be back in on Tuesday. Tuesday, they say, if he can't hit in batting practice on Wednesday, he's going on the DL. What? And suddenly he goes on the DL. So oblique strain, more than 2 weeks. Probably three, maybe a little bit more. Anthony Goh's the guy to watch. One category player. I mean, that's it. Stolen bases.
Seriously.
Last year, 56 games with the Blue Jays last year, 15 steals, but terrible strikeout to walk rate. He's one of those guys, sort of like Villar with the Astros or Junior Lake. If he gets on, he's going to run.
Right.
The only question is, will he get on? Was only hitting 239 in Triple A, so we'll wait and see on him. But if you need speed, and look, if you lose Rasmus, you might as well pick up Goes because he's going to take those at-bats.
Yep. And then finally, from the D-back side, Cahill back, Tyler Skaggs on the, 100th time on the Reno shuttle?
Yeah. Definitely racking up the frequent flyer miles. I hope he's renting and not buying.
Does he have to fly from Reno to
Reno to Vegas?
To Phoenix?
Yeah, you'd probably do that as a shuttle flight. I don't think you want to drive. That's through the desert.
That could be fun. See a coyote.
Find a skull in the sand, like in a cowboy.
with a snake in it, right? Like going through it.
Cahill's ERA up exactly a run this year from last year, but still gets a ton of ground balls. The strikeout rate is still good. It's the home run rate and the walk rate are up. So he's got to find his command, and he's got to keep the ball down and not get wild in the zone. You know, again, wasn't really having a good year, but was a kind of a I think he might have been a list of 12 guy this year. Mm. So again, nice little upside play for down the stretch. Keep an eye on that. Again, the Diamondbacks in division, that's a lot of San Diego, a lot of San Francisco, Rockies on the road without cargo. Mm-hmm. Some possibilities there for Cahill the rest of the way.
Okay. And then one guy that, you know, I mean, it's just, you have to just mention it for the sake of mentioning. I don't know what else you can possibly do about it. But Soriano, who just had one of the more legendary weeks and at least a four-game stretch that you've ever seen. I mean, when you're getting your 18th RBI on, like, your fifth homer in four games.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just that. And it just made me think, you know, guys, I mean, listen, this is a little bit extreme, obviously, but guys just get their number somehow, some way. And here's a guy that's going to use that madness to figure out a way to maybe go 30-100 this year.
Yeah, I mean, literally as good a four-day stretch as any player has had ever. I don't think that's an exaggeration. 13 for 18, 5 homers, 18 RBIs. I mean, that is literally a good month.
Yep.
There's 6 months in the season. You prorate that out, that's 30 homers and 108 RBIs. Any player would love to have that. He did it in 4 days. Nice. But then, of course, on Sunday, what does he do? 0 for 6 with 10 runners left on base. No. Baseball giveth, baseball taketh away. You know, look, Soriano's a known commodity at this point. He's a guy who's going to sell out to hit home runs. He's not going to help you with the average. He can steal a little bit, but you know what he is. But here's the thing, the takeaway for me. With Soriano in the fold now, with Granderson back, and with A-Rod back, the three of those guys in the lineup together since August 5th, the Yankees have scored 71 runs in 13 games. It was a month ago we were like, the Yankees are a pitcher ditch, pick on target offense.
I know.
You know, with Lyle Overbay and Vernon Wells and Jason Nix and guys like that in the lineup every day. Now the Yankees you have to treat as a solid, real major league offense again. A-Rod is swinging well. Granderson's getting on base, stealing some bases too. Mm-hmm. He didn't run as much last year. He's got 5 steals and limited playing time already this year. So, you know, is Soriano a superstar? Absolutely not. But now you've got him in context in a much improved lineup. That's a bump in value for him, a bump in value for Yankees across the board.
All right, and one thing I missed on the DL side real quick, Dan Uggla to the DL to get LASIK surgery. Enough was enough. The team tried to have him get that previously. I guess he wanted to try it out without it. And they said, well, we'll make it easy.
He said after the surgery, his vision is now 20/15, which is like Ted Williams' fighter pilot vision. I can't remember who posted it on Twitter, but maybe it was Eno Saris from FanGraphs. I want to give credit where it's due. I don't know who it was, but posted a study that some medical journal had done, finding all the guys who had disclosed that they had LASIK surgery, mm-hmm. and the conclusion was it makes no difference.
not according to the commercials.
Okay. For fantasy stats, you know, sure. There are a lot of other variables that could come in. Guys, you know, their age, their ballpark, whatever it may be. Uggla, career low contact rate this year, but the walk rate was still solid, and his home run to fly ball rate was pretty much a career high. So, you know, maybe he would be just as well closing his eyes and swinging because he's got just as good a chance. But, you know, if you're an optimist, maybe it matters. We'll see. Probably he'll be back in a couple of weeks, and we'll get to find out.
Okay. Just some other guys that were red hot, going back to the Soriano theme. Will Venable with the walk-off homer on Sunday. That helps his hitting streak get to 15. 5 homers, 5 steals. Amazing. Chris Davis, not the guy in Baltimore, the other one for the Brewers. 11 runs, 4 homers in August, 12 for 33. And Brandon Belt, coming off a Player of the Week win, kept it going for a little bit longer, but his 11-game hitting streak finally came to an end on Sunday. But he was red hot. 14 runs, 4 homers, 9 RBIs over 47 at-bats. Who stands out the most? And Venable's been nuts since the All-Star break.
Yeah, I have Venable and Belt on my Tout Wars team, which is good because hopefully they can get me out of last place. you know, look, Venable, they say, you know, the manager, the hitting coach, they say he's using the field a lot more. Maybe there's some truth to this. This is a guy who's been a platoon player his entire career, helpless against lefties. This year in 62 at-bats against lefties, a 941 OPS. Maybe that's a small sample size, but maybe he's figuring it out. Already got a career high in homers. He's running less, but he averaged 26 steals the last 3 years, so maybe he's capable of giving you a little help there. Nice little pickup in deep leagues. Brandon Belt, you know, everybody thinks he's like a failed prospect. He's only 25 years old.
Yep.
He's doubled his career home run total. 16 the last 2 years. He's got 15 this year. He hits lefties. I mean, never mind Will Venable. His OPS against lefties is actually higher than versus righties by almost 50 points over his career. 25 years old, great, great keeper pickup. This guy, I think, is a year away from being a 300 hitter mm-hmm. with 25 homers and 15 steals. Mm-hmm. Very big Brandon Belt fan.
Belted.
Yeah, and finally, Chris Davis, the other Chris Davis. He's been outstanding filling in for Ryan Braun. 12 for 33, 11 runs, 4 homers. You know, you look at his minor league stats, you wonder why more people haven't talked about him as a prospect. A 288 hitter in the minors, 392 on base percentage, very good eye. This year in AAA, 13 homers in 69 games. That's good power. And he can steal, had a steal about every 10 games throughout his minor league career. So maybe an under-the-radar prospect, but when you're looking this time of year, the big takeaway for all these guys, this is the time of year for production, not names. You can cover it up. If you've got some guy you draft in the fifth round, guess what? Now's the time of year. Yeah, you can cut him. All right? These are guys who are producing. If the schedule's favorable, if the matchups are favorable, you get production in there. Names just have to wait.
All right, let's do some lightning round before we wrap it up, if that's all right by you, sir.
It is.
Okay. At Brandon Sprague, I don't know if any relation to Ed, but this is Brandon. Who's the best keeper of this group? 5x5 Roto, 260 budget. Brett Laurie, $11. Fowler for $6. Donaldson for $5. Beachy for $5. Teron for $5, who's coming off a nice start again. He's red hot. And Kendrys Morales for $3.
Yeah, it's tough to say no to Teron, but I would go for one of the bats, and I would be looking at Laurie or Fowler. Laurie, the most expensive of the bunch, but $11 is not bad, and he's been on fire the last month. Dexter Fowler, age 27 season. The power has dried up since April, but his all-around game, he looks like a 2020 guy who's going to score a ton of runs. I would probably go for one of those guys and then use the next, you know, as long as you have up until the deadline to figure it out.
At Blue Rocks 81, pick one of these catchers rest of season in a head-to-head. Napoli, Yan Gomes, Sal Perez, Jason Castro.
I think you got to keep Napoli. For all of his ups and downs this year, he's put up the numbers. He's in the best lineup, the best ballpark. You know, Gomes is not an everyday player. Castro's having a nice year, but on a weaker team. Perez, weaker team, and having a down year. I think you got to keep Napoli.
All right, here's an interesting one. At Brett Holtz, trade Cargo and Jose Fernandez for Puig and Shields in a keeper league. 6x6, total bases and innings pitched are the extra categories, but he is playing to win now.
I understand the rationale here. Cargo on the DL, we don't know when he's going to be back. Jose Fernandez, impending innings limit. Mm-hmm. Shields, you know you're going to get the innings. And Puig, I mean, look, after a brief slump, is hitting everything in sight again. I still think you have to aim higher. You're trading a first-round elite offensive bat and a guy who arguably is the rookie of the year in the NL, looks mm-hmm. like if not an ace, then maybe a number two because he doesn't have the track record.
Sure.
I think you need to get back a guy who's having a star season, but over the full body this season. Puig has done it for, let's call it 2 months now. Shields is having an okay year. I think you need a little bit better on one or the other of those.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right. It's not about trading Cargo and Fernandez. It's about the return.
It's about winning now.
Right. It's about winning now the return to help you make sure you do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, look, if you could get a guy who maybe isn't having as good a season as Puig, but you know you can count on him the rest of the way, or
like
a pitcher.
Like who?
I wish you hadn't asked me that. You know, I would go for Jason Hayward over Puig right now.
Interesting.
Because Hayward, we've seen what he can do over a full season. Mm-hmm. He's hot right now. He's healthy. The Braves are scoring again. I'd be a little bit more confident in someone like him. You know, same thing with Shields. I'd want to go one step up from Shields. Kuroda even, someone like that, who's just having a little bit better season or a little bit better track record, that kind of thing. Right. I just need a little bump up on one of those teams.
And I'll just play devil's advocate one more time because I really feel for Brett in this situation because, honestly, I don't think he has any leverage. Because if he's trying to win now, if he gets stuck with Fernandez and Cargo,
not going to help him win now.
He may not win now.
Yeah.
So I think he's kind of – his back's up against the wall. Was this the trade offer he made and he sold himself short?
Or was this the best
offer he has received?
Yeah, look, I mean, only Brett knows what the market will bear. Right. But again, if he's still shopping for it, I would push for a little bit more.
Agreed. And then the final one, I should say, from Higgs on the blog. Want to get your thoughts on the use of fab money over the season. In my leagues, we get $1.60. At this point in the season, I have between $8 and $15 left. I see a number of teams that have over half of their fab left, which doesn't make much sense to me. For September call-ups, I'd be looking for cheap keepers, so wouldn't be bidding more than three anyway. Paid a lot for saves by Bell and Hawkins in an NL only, but those few saves gave me about 3 to 4 points. So, Do you have a strategy for use of fab at this point in the season? What percentage of fab are you shooting for?
Well, I think that there are really two keys when it comes to using fab. Number one, spend your money when a difference maker player comes along. You know, Bell and Hawkins, maybe between them, only gave you 8 or 10 saves, but in an NL only, that's a difference maker. But then again, when Jose Fernandez got added to the roster in April and Tony Cingrani got called up, I think, in April or May, those are potential difference makers. Nick Franklin, I think, was a guy that I personally viewed as a difference maker.
Sure.
That's where you spend your money, when someone significant comes along. But by the same token, you want to see, even if you spend early, and I have no problem with that, keep enough that you have some flexibility. So if you have an injury or a good opportunity comes along, you know, Todd Redmond gets a start against the Astros, and you want to pick that up, you have a buck to spend here or there. 2 years ago in NFBC, I had a lot of offensive holes. Eric Hosmer got brought up. I think I spent something like, I don't remember the exact amount, but $630 out of $1,000. And that was after already having spent $150 or so. So I basically spent 85% of my remaining budget on one player in May. But he was a difference maker player in my view. This year, I've been spending it gradually, taking a couple of shots here and there, but I've been spending a lot of 5 and 10s and 12s along the way, jumping up into the 40s on a couple of pickups. I got LaTroy Hawkins 2 weeks ago for $54. Marlon Byrd when I needed an outfield fill-in. But I still have, even at this late season, I think the third or fourth most fab money in my league. Now, nobody can spend $100, but a lot of guys are in the 20s and 30s. A couple of guys are spent. I've still got flexibility for the next 6 weeks that I can make tactical moves here and there. So spend aggressively. Just save a couple dollars in your back pocket for later on.
All right. Well, always good advice to save a couple bucks in your back pocket.
You know what I call it? The emergency 20.
There you go.
Whenever I go out, I fold up a 20 and hide it from myself in my wallet.
Yeah.
So that way, God forbid I need a ride home, I've got a 20 for the cab driver.
Okay, you never heard of an ATM and a credit card and a debit card?
Sometimes those options aren't available, Mike.
Okay, yeah. Well, I don't know where you hang out, but we'll just leave it at that.
Let's put it this way. I've had to call a cab to pick me up to take me to the ATM machine.
Oh, absolutely.
To pay for the cab ride.
Oh, I've totally done that a million times. Absolutely. All right, well, enough of our shady past. We'll wrap this one up, and Corey, you'll be back on Friday?
If JB's available, we will be here on
God
Friday.
Willing.
God willing.
JB willing.
Baseball gods willing, we'll be here on Friday.
All right, well, that'll do it for this edition. Thanks to the Goose and, of course, the studio crew, who always does a great job on the other side of the glass. Keep an eye on the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. This has been the MLB.com Fantasy 411.